I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With Rhys Darby and Dan Schreiber.
The hunting man leads us back to his hut. I take one look outside before the heavy door is shut.
Look at these readings, he says to Geeky Dan.
What sort of readings? Because I'm not a Bible man. He's not, I butt in. He's more into Aleister Crowley. There's a from outside. Yes, it's getting really growly. This guy's got computers and an anomaly screen. I says, what you tracking, Willis? He says, things that can't be seen. There's a gateway to their world. They come here for hunting. I attract them with peanut butter scones and I hang up some bunting.
Oh, wow.
We've got to save buttons, I say straight away. But a researcher has actually texted me after deciphering the Morse code from last week's rapisode, and it reads, hey, I'm okay. Then we suddenly see a face pop up on the screen. It's buttons, yells Dan.
But what do you mean, says the hunter. This can't be so. That camera feed is coming from another dimension, you know.
Say what?
What you talking about, hunter?
Find out more next week in Episode 4, dudes. On the way.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I'm in another dimension.
Amazing.
What
wow.
is going on?
This is so exciting.
I just can't believe we saw you on the screen.
I just also can't believe that there's Different Strokes references, and there is two of them, not one, two Different Strokes references. Oh, that is meta. Oh my god, this is wow.
Wow, it's weird, right?
And now I'm really, really hungry for a peanut butter scone.
Yeah, well, that's how he attracts them, and he hangs up bunting, which I thought was lovely. The imagery. I mean, when they turn this into a TV series, you can imagine it.
I tell you what.
It's all designed. You're like a set designer and storyteller at the same time.
Yeah. When I go into Warner Brothers and I pitch this by rapping at them, they're going to have a visual feast as to, you know, how it's going to be put together. And it's going to be the only rap pitch, I think, that's done for a cryptozoological dramedy series. I mean, none of those things have been...
Well, it's very exciting to be back together, guys. It's been over a month since we sat and did this. But, of course, in between all of that was a live show.
Yes. It took us that long to get over it.
It actually really did. It really did. Yeah.
It was amazing. It was an amazing experience. And it's if anyone is not part of our Patreon, sign up so that you can watch it. It was like a disaster movie, but, you know, we brought it home. You know, it was Apollo 13.
It really was.
That very much is it.
And you know what? The beautiful thing is that the amount of people that after the show came up to me and were like, all of those technical blunders, they were all pre-rehearsed and planned, weren't they? And I was like,
well, that's the thing.
I was like,
yeah. What'd you say?
Yeah, I was like, of course, we're that good. Sure. That we can act it out.
I think, well, your blunders are that good that they look almost fake. They're too good to be real.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of your gifts.
I just don't know if that's a compliment or not.
No, but it worked. It worked, you know, almost. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, you've got to take your tinfoil hat off to you, man, because we also managed to, you know, get one of the great adventurer explorers on the stage with us, which was a fantastic experience to talk to Peter Hillary.
It was incredible. When I called him to ask him if he would be part of our show and talk about his father's, Sir Edmund Hillary's, Yeti expedition, I was fully expecting him just literally to hang up the phone or at least say, thank you very kindly, but no thank you. But he was so excited to be part of it, and he was so great. And he sent an email afterwards saying thank you so much for, you know, involving him, and that he had a lot of fun.
Wow.
And so it was really good. And the most important thing is that Dan Schreiber informed him of two new facts that he didn't anything about, which was incredible.
What were they? They were the fact that there was a comic written about his dad's Yeti expedition, in which he appears in one of the comic frames.
Then there was the terrible conspiracy theory that it didn't happen or something.
That he didn't summon.
Was that the other one?
Yeah, that was the other one. I was really surprised he hadn't heard of that. So this was the idea that a book was published a few years after the ascent of Everest by someone who claimed that Hillary didn't make it up to the top because the person who reported the news, the only person to report the news back to the UK, had done so via telegram, but the telegram said that they didn't make it. The weather was bad, they didn't get up there. And what that was Jan Morris, who was reporting on it, wanted to hide the news to make sure it was an exclusive for a newspaper. So it was a pre-written code that was set up between Jan Morris and the newspaper. But obviously, if you look at it as just as a telegram, it says they didn't make it.
Yeah.
And England wanted them to make it so that they could have good news for the crowning of the new queen, Elizabeth II. The coronation was happening a few days later. So, so there was a conspiracy.
I'll stop you there, Dan, because what you're actually doing now is just fueling the conspiracy theorists out there. And, and as a New Zealander, I have to shut the gate on that, even that idea, because come on.
We're not allowed that. It's not allowed.
But it was an amazing thing. I really hope we do more live shows. I was patched in on a TV from London. I was sitting in the QI offices. You both were on stage. Peter Hillary was there live. There were about 300 people in the audience. Boone flew in from a different bit of New Zealand. I mean, it was a special out there experience. I loved every second of it.
We'll do this again, and hopefully when the world opens up, we'd like to tour properly.
Mm.
Well, didn't we have an idea whilst we were doing that show that because Dan Schreiber's really successful show,
oh, yeah. What is that, though?
No Such Thing as a Fish. He does a tour and he sells out massive arenas like the Sydney Opera House and, you know, the Albert Hall and stuff like that.
Oh, I don't go on about it.
Arenas.
Yeah, we all know.
No, but the idea is...
Are you promoting his other show?
Well,
he does it every week now.
Oh, I do.
He's just hoping to get on it. He's hoping to get on it.
I'm just saying. I mean, I am available.
I can see the email. Look, just quietly... Dan, I have been promoting the show quite often on the other show, so it's probably about time you at least give me a small slot.
No, I was going to say, you know how comedians quite often, when they're on tour, do like a late night gig at some little small venue with an alter ego or something like that? We could follow Dan's tour whilst he's doing No Such Thing as Fish, and then late at night,
he
sells out the Hollywood Bowl. And then later that night, we come along and he does like a little gig at a little, comedy bar.
Comedy club.
Yeah, like a little
a dirty club at the end of a dark street.
That sounds great.
And we're on at 12:30.
Cryptid could open for No Such Thing as a Fish. Do a quick 20-minute podcast.
There's no such thing as a quick. Can you imagine us trying to open? I mean, would be absolute chaos. An hour and 40 in, and people would be looking at their watch, going, "When's the actual show? When's the fish coming on?"
Can these guys get off?
And you know, I'd never leave. And even when your show did go on, Dan, I'd just come back on.
Yeah, exactly.
Every show during your live tour would have a special guest, Rhys Darby.
Well, Rhys has become unofficially the favorite member of the team, including the four of us, as in when people are like, "Who's your favorite fish member?" I remember that episode when Rhys was on. I think he's my favorite.
He's not even officially part of the band.
He's not even in it. Yeah.
Oh, well, let me know. I'm just checking my calendar now. I'm available most days actually to join No Such Thing as a Fish. If that was your next question. If that was your next question, the answer, Dan, is most days I'm available.
I'll let you know when that's my next question.
Well, guess what, guys? I think it's time we do what everyone's waiting for, everyone's favourite segment. It's back after a long break. But here it is. It's
Weekly World Weird News.
Crazy, freaky, watch out. All right, well, as you guys know, I've been pretty busy here, so I'm going to jump in with my headline before it gets stolen.
Okay.
Lobster man eaten by whale only to be spat out and live to tell the tale.
I knew you would get that one.
You know I like people getting eaten.
Yeah. Wow. Lobster man. Okay, that sounds cool. I got one here. Humans, over the course of 20 training sessions that last 2 to 3 hours long, over the course of 10 weeks, can become Batman.
What?
What? So, Lobster Man, Batman, what superhero are you chucking in, Buttons?
Wow. Okay, well, that may have just swayed my... There was one article I was going to read, but maybe I change it now. No, I'm gonna stick with it. The friendship paradox doesn't always explain real friendships, mathematicians say.
Oh, wow. Are you a bit worried about how things are going between us all?
It's a really interesting article. We won't go into it yet because I'm way more interested in whales.
Yeah. So here we go. A man, that's right, a lobster man. You like how I did that? So I said man, and then I said, yeah, that's right. And then I added lobster. So therefore, when I said man, a lot of people were going, what, you mean lobster? You mean lobster man? And then I'm like, yeah, I agree with what you were thinking there as I said man, that you needed to add lobster. I'm agreeing with all you guys.
And what is actually even a lobster man?
Yeah, well, it's something I've come up with, to be fair. He's just a man.
Right.
To give him credit, listen to this, he does dive for lobsters.
Right.
Okay, so I'm sure he's been called a lobster man before.
A lobster diving man.
Yeah, just like if you're into cars, you're a car guy, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This chap, unfortunately, or fortunately for us, for the news, was swallowed by a whale and lived to tell the tale. So here we go. Let's dive into it.
What?
Get it? So basically, he's 56. His name is Michael Packard, and he'd been basically lobster diving for years. That's what he does. He's Massachusetts, okay, just in the water off Cape Cod. It was his second dive of the day. And as he reached the seafloor, he encountered something rather weird. And he's quoted here, "All of a sudden, I felt this huge shove, and next thing I knew, I was in the dark. I could sense I was moving, and I could feel the whale squeezing with the muscles in its mouth. Without realizing it, that's right, he'd inadvertently been swallowed by a huge humpback whale."
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hang on, so he's in the mouth, and he's having to go, okay, I don't know where I am now. I'm in darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's felt muscles going around him. So he's made the assumption, yeah, I'm inside a whale now.
Oh, yeah. He actually thought he was in a shark. He actually thought it was all over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He says, he thought to himself, there's no way I'm getting out of here. I'm done. I'm dead. And then, of course, it goes on here that he started obviously thinking about his kids. He's got a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. similar to me, so I'd be thinking exactly the same thing. You know, all these imagine all the things that come to your head, you know, rapidly because you think it's all over.
Oh, yeah. Going, is Buttons and Dan going to talk about me as a story in Weekly News?
You'll be going, well, it's unfortunate for me, but it's fortunate for our Weekly World Weird News, which I won't be a part of, but it's fortunate. Yeah.
This is going to be the best Weekly World Weird News ever. Luckily, great story because he got spat out. So he says, I saw light and then he started throwing his head side to side and next thing he knew he was outside in the water. So ultimately he escaped and all he got was a broken leg and a few other injuries. Let's hear it from the chap himself. Here's Michael.
Now to a CBSN Boston exclusive, a lobsterman says that he was swallowed up and spit out by a whale off of Provincetown. Provincetown fire officials tell us that the diver was 45 feet down when the whale grabbed him. The whale then surfaced and let that diver, Michael Packard, go. He was then pulled back onto his boat and brought to shore. CBSN Boston was the only camera there as the diver left the hospital. No one can tell the story like Michael himself.
I'm a lobster diver out of Provincetown, Massachusetts. And I was diving today. And I jumped over and I got down to about 45 feet of water. And all of a sudden, I just felt this huge bump and everything went dark. And I could sense that I was moving. And I was like, oh my God, did I just get bit by a shark? And then I felt around and I realized there was no teeth and I had felt really no great pain. And then I realized, oh my God, I'm in a whale's mouth.
Great place to do an interview. What listeners don't realize is there's this giant garbage truck pulling up just behind him and it's opening up and it's about to get... No matter where this guy goes, he's getting eaten.
Everything wants to eat him.
What a story. I was just going to say, you know, whale watching is quite a popular thing, isn't it? You know, imagine you're on a boat. Oh, yeah. Someone goes, oh, look, to your right, there's a humpback coming up, comes out of the water and just spits a man out at you.
Oh, just, wow.
What a sight. It's an amazing story.
But also, it happened in biblical times, allegedly, with Jonah.
Mm. Right. Really? Is that the story?
Yeah, Jonah and the whale, he got swallowed and then he got spat out.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder in that regard whether there's some sort of religious thing that this guy might be going through.
Well, I do have a theory.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Is it time to play the theme tune? I think it is. Here it is, folks. Finally, everyone's been waiting for it. It's Buttons. Fairy time.
Down in the garden beside the little pond sits a little dainty boy with a special bond. He likes to watch the pixies travelling through the trees. They sprinkle all the magic dust. He says, yes, please. It's Buttons fairy time, Buttons fairy time, Buttons fairy time. Come join in. Buttons fairy time, Buttons fairy time. Everybody hold your hands and have a big grin.
So we need to explain that sting a little bit because people who didn't see the live show, that sting makes no sense whatsoever.
All right, let me explain it then. Basically, Buttons asked me to do a theme for him and he said it was for... He told me it was for Buttons Fairy Time. So I made that sting for him. I spent a lot of time on it because I know he likes fairies.
I do.
And I thought he's going to, each episode, he was going to talk about fairies. Turns out he said fairy time. But anyway, there it is.
So what's your fairy news this week?
And how does that relate to whales?
Dude, every time you have a theory, that sting is being played.
Oh, my God. And we're going to have to explain it every time.
No, we won't.
So my theory with this one is that whales are incredibly intelligent animals, right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And what was this guy doing? He was a lobster diver. He's diving down and killing other sea creatures. And why would a whale not be really pissed off at that? And this whale is going, you know what? I'm sick and tired of this guy coming along. I'm friends with the lobsters. The lobsters know, but
do we know that whales are friends with lobsters? I don't want to cut your theory off too quickly.
Wow, this is my theory.
You said that quite confidently.
In my theory, this is exactly what
one of the things with Buttons' fairy time is that we can't interject.
Oh, my God.
That's a great rule.
We have to let everything fly.
Oh, my God.
Every detail.
That's part of the rules. Yep.
Okay.
If he takes too long, a bell goes off and it's over.
Oh, shit. No, and then, like, it's like that movie about the car wash with the whales, you know, that animated cartoon thing, and they're all friends and Finding Nemo and...
What?
Oh, yeah, Shark's Tale?
Oh, Shark's Tale.
Yeah,
oh,
there you
go.
Yeah, okay. And they're all the sea creatures are little buddies. And so this guy's going, I'm so lucky that I'm alive and that the whale didn't eat me. The truth is... he should be going, oh, the whale was serving me a lesson for going down and killing all of these huge, big, beautiful lobsters.
Yeah.
And he should look for a new vocation. That's my theory.
I like it.
Okay.
And that's this week's Buttons Fairy Time. Good one. I like that.
If we became friends with the whales, that seems like a really interesting new form of transport. Because if you can survive in the mouth of a whale with your breathing apparatus, but travel at the speed of a whale inside its mouth, that feels quite...
It's very much a one-way relationship, though, isn't it? If that's a friendship where you're like, hey, mate, I just need to go down to Florida. Would you mind just like... He's like, yeah, okay, cool, but I've taken you for 3 rides this week already. There's no... What are you doing for me?
I'm leaving the lobsters alone. Promise I won't touch the lobsters.
I had to do some whale sounds recently on... I can't remember what it was for, but they were quite impressed.
Was it for one of those little sleep sound devices that play different
the
sounds?
Calm app.
Rhys Darby bedtime story on the Calm app.
Did you also have to do the sound of rain falling on a tin roof or wind blowing through the trees?
You know what? They should do one of those little sound things that you get, like it's a key ring and it's got the buttons on it and you can play different sounds. I mean, I could market that.
Yeah.
And what, have different whale sounds on each button?
Yeah, 3 different types of whale. Really, really bad idea.
Oh, really bad.
So what are the other 2 buttons? They're whales as well. So you've got a whale. Yep. And what's this one? That's another whale. But it sounds similar. Yeah, but it's a different whale. And what's the third one? That's a whale. So 3 whales. Yeah. Cool, man. I'll think about it.
Well, not even different breeds. Just different. This one's Andrew. Yeah. This one's Mary.
They're all humpbacks.
All humpbacks, yeah.
It's a shame he didn't go further in, though, with the apparatus, you know. If he got swallowed, would he... He still could have been regurgitated if the whale didn't take to him.
Yeah.
But usually at that point, you'd be dead, wouldn't you? Like 30 to 60 seconds in, with the panic...
Yeah.
Air would have left your body, you would have died, they'd be swallowing a dead thing. But that could have been a living human swallowed by a whale. I mean, what an adventure.
I think, yeah, absolutely. But also great that the whale clearly felt that there was something in its mouth that it didn't want. And you know, we all get that feeling when you take a swig or something, it looks like going back to me and my old ashtray skulls in the army. And, you know, there's an ashtray in the bar. They fill it with beer. It's got smoke butts and ash in it and crap, and they hand it round. Well, I say hand it round. They give it to Darby, and he swigs it back, you know. He doesn't even ask. He's like, because he can see the other soldiers. He sees particularly the hefty sergeant looking at him, and he knows he's got to do it if he wants to, you know, have that sort of initiation into the Signals Corps. And then he does it. And after he does it, and he feels the cigarettes in his mouth, and it's horrible.
Hey, you're in a safe space here. Hey, that's a new segment. It's called Reese's Counseling Time. Reese's Counseling Time. Okay, lie back on the couch, Mr. Darby. What would you like dealt with this week, Mr. Darby?
It's the laughter. You know, it's just the laughter of everyone around me. They laugh, and I don't know. I mean, I like laughter. I think, oh, this is great, but they're laughing at me. They're laughing
with you. They're laughing with you, Mr. Darby.
But I'm not laughing. Oh. That old adage of, oh, they're laughing with you. You've got to be laughing for that to happen.
That's a good point. Okay, they probably are laughing at you. I scrap that.
Mind you, one of them did sort of give me a nudge and say, laugh, laugh. And I'm like, and then they can, you know, they can really say that they're laughing with me at that point, I suppose.
That's true. That actually happened, didn't
it? Yeah, I did the ashtray skull. I mean, it's pretty bad. I don't think it happens anymore.
No, I hope not. I
did the old boot skull. It's just old army days, you know? I mean, I've lived through it, guys. I've been the boot skull is easier. You just
it depends who's booted it.
Listeners out here, when I say skull, a lot of the listeners will be like, what are you talking about, Willis?
Oh, third reference of the show.
The reference is, well, no, that's the reference. The skull reference is that in New Zealand, and I think the Commonwealth, we the term skull means to, like, chug back liquid. So you
And so that in New Zealand, the crystal skull has a completely different...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of us turned up to that fourth Indiana Jones movie expecting it to all be about heavy drinking of crystals.
Yeah. Everybody brought along their grandma's finest crystal mugs and glasses and with, you know, bottles of beer ready to skull from the crystal.
We did. Remember before we went through after the, you know, we were in the foyer of the theatre there and we got our snacks.
Yeah.
And we're all sort of like, ting, we're all tinging our crystals. And remember, just because a lot of the guys couldn't afford crystal and they'd go, dong. Not crystal, mate. Not crystal. Okay, get out. Get out. No sculling for you tonight. And that was a big evening.
That was huge. Oh, wow.
Then we saw the film and went, oh, it's fucking aliens. This is bullshit.
Well, let's just get drunk anyway.
Yeah, we were drunk by then anyway. Hey!
Ashtray skull. Ashtray.
No! Please, no, guys. You can't smoke in the theatre.
Take your boot off. Take your boot off, mate. Take your,
Take your boot off. Take your boot off. Boot and ashtray. Oh, no! Laugh.
What's going on in here?
It's all right. We're laughing with him.
Is he? Are you? Oh, yeah, he's laughing. All right, right. Good. As long as you're all laughing together. Good movie, isn't it? It's Crystal Skull.
Ding.
Ding. I think you really should actually see somebody about that episode of your life at some point, Reese. I think might be time to open up that wound.
Oh, there's many other wounds as well, please.
I just quickly Googled it. A humpback whale couldn't swallow a human, so...
I had nothing to worry about.
Oh, well, that's that then.
More evidence for your theory, though.
Yeah, lots of lobsters were saved that day.
Cool, should we do my one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is in as few as 10 weeks, researchers have been able to teach 12 participants how... to echolocate.
Oh, wow.
So when I say turned into Batman, I don't mean turned into a vigilante who can save the
so
town.
You're talking real bats. Well, you know what? For me, that's even more exciting.
I know.
That's still a superpower.
Exactly. So echolocation, as we all know, it's how bats, without being able to see, are able to tell where things are by sending sound and hearing it echoes coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's a tree there, I can hear that that's 6 feet away or whatever through the echo coming back.
Yeah.
So these researchers...
Ting!
Exactly.
Wait, there's crystal nearby. Ting! Oh, I'm holding it. Right, let's go. Let's go through into the cinema. Sorry.
So over 20 training sessions, which lasted only 2 to 3 hours each time, they had these 12 people. Some were blind. Some were... partially sighted, and some I think were sight was okay. They were old, they were young, all of them had the same responses, which were they were able to navigate virtual mazes, zigzags, U-bends, and they were doing this by using mouth clicks.
You know I'm gonna do it.
I know. I mean, it just makes so much sense. Coming home late at night, just you know, little mouth clicks guiding you through the woods. Yeah, so in the final two sessions, participants had their navigation skills tested in a virtual maze that they'd never done before. And even while blinded in this environment, collisions were way fewer. I mean, there were still collisions, but there were way fewer than at the start of the program, which means that they had trained their brain to understand the distances and so on. So, I mean, it's just a crazy thing that I can't believe we're capable of doing. There's so many things that I feel like we don't know we're capable of doing as humans that we see animals doing, going, well, I guess that will never be us. But it turns out if we just, like learning the piano, train ourselves a bit,
a good
then
point.
we can become Batman.
It's the 10,000 hours thing, isn't it, as well? So if you, particularly with music, if you put in 10,000 hours, you're going to get there. If you put in, what is it?
10 weeks of 20 sessions that last 2 to 3 hours each. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's interesting how they work that out, how much time they think they really need to get you to that point. And of course, if they continue that, you're only going to get better. The bat people are going to be even more precise.
I'm trying to think about the times where that is actually going to be really helpful. And it'd be like, don't get me wrong, it'd be great if, like, imagine if you're like, there's some kind of natural disaster and you're stuck inside a building and you've got to get out, or it's filled with smoke and you can't see very far, but obviously, you know, you can echo, like, that would be amazing.
You're inside the mouth of a whale.
Yeah.
How big it is to make the size of the whale.
You quickly take your apparatus off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the water.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think in a practical sense, when are the times that I would actually want to be able to use echolocation? And the only time I can come up with is, like, you know, when it's early in the morning, you got to get up early in the morning to go and do something and your partner is in bed still trying to sleep and you're trying to creep around and you can't find your undies or, you know, and you switch the light on your phone and it's way too bright.
How early is this? So it's still dark.
It's like 4 a.m. You know, you're going out to, like, go do something fun.
Do,
like,
a shoot or something.
Yeah, do a shoot or hunt for an animal or something. And then rather than switching your light on, you can walk into the bedroom and go,
well, you've got to be able to do it for a start, but can you say that again? That was almost. Wait, is this with the new mic? You've got a new mic as well,
I've
right?
I've got a new mic. No, this must be something in the transmission.
What?
It's like a wet fart. I don't know what that noise is. It's not.
Hang on.
I mean,
maybe it's just
sounds
my
like
room.
Your mouth is missing itself.
Maybe.
It's like you're trying to do it. And it's missing.
Maybe it's a normal sound, but I've got a wet room. Maybe I'm in a very wet room. Well, anyway, if I'm in my bedroom at 4 a.m. walking around going...
Yeah.
Is that better or worse than an iPhone light?
I think I would stick to your phone light.
Really?
Personally.
Yeah.
But honestly, do the six-week course. You need to get the noises better.
Michelle will wake up going, are you doing wet farts in bed again? No, I'm trying to find my undies. Did you do a wet fart in your undies? Are you trying to find new undies?
I want her to wake up and see you, like, in the dark, like this figure of a man, like naked, sort of between the bathroom and the bed, going, what are you doing?
Shh, go back to bed. I'm trying to find my undies. I've got to get my...
Just turn the light on, you dickhead.
No, I've done the course.
Going by Reese's sounds, though, I reckon Rosie, Reese's wife, is going to have sort of weird, random ping-pong dreams. Because your noise just sounds like a game going on.
Those are my extreme ones, but I would take it down to more of a... You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Like radar. Like actual radar in a submarine. That ping.
Oh, yeah.
Bing. Why can't they do that? I mean, why do they have to do the... Why can't they do the... Ping. Maybe that's the second course. Okay, I've got a list of people here who have graduated, and you go through to level 2. We've got Reese Darby.
Yay!
Dan Schreiber.
Yay!
And that's it. Okay, you guys are going through.
Oh, what about me? No,
I'm afraid not, so.
I'm afraid to see my wet parts. I want to go through the virtual maze.
No, but you other two, you can go through. You'll be doing the ping class, okay, which is just it's an hour session.
Do you know what, though? I have seen a couple of videos of blind people echolocating, and it is actually really quite incredible. There is a guy who does bicycle trips. There's a guy who does. There's a guy who does bicycle treks.
It's not related, but he does bicycle trips. So it's nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But I just want to get this in here. I'm going to squeeze in this because he's got a trip coming up in July, and there's a couple of positions still available. His name's Larry Fogman, and he rides a Relay 20. His phone number's available.
Thanks, Buttons. Thanks for putting that in there. I know you're busy today, and... yeah, like I say, there's just a couple of seats available. I mean, it is a tandem after all.
So what does he does bike tricks?
Well, no, let me show. I'm going to show you this guy. So here you go. I'm going to play you a video of a guy here. Well, the video says it all.
While we're waiting for it, you're right. Blind people have learnt how to use canes and so on, like by hitting their cane to the ground.
Oh, so it's the same process.
Yeah. Because obviously their senses are hugely heightened via sound.
Well, I feel like I've been taking the mickey. I hope no one thinks I have.
No.
Hey, I just like making noises. What I tried to say there was I like making noises, but if we go back and listen to what I actually did.
You can't go back and do it if I can't go back and do bicycle trips.
All right, let's see the...
Okay, here we go.
We found other people possessing superhuman powers. Daniel Kish is like the superhero Daredevil, who's blind but uses heightened senses to fight crime. Daniel lost his sight as a child, but he can still ride a bike. Pedaling down a street, he somehow avoids cars. He can even sense when to turn corners, much like a bat that uses sonar to navigate. How does he do it? Daniel makes clicking sounds that act like a form of human sonar. He calls it echolocation. The sound bounces off objects.
So I'm hearing the reflection of sound as it comes back.
Daniel showed me how he navigates the streets.
A passageway between buildings. And then we have stuff, basically, in the way. Tall stuff, posts or something. Right in the middle of the walkway.
When people say... you have superhuman abilities. How do you respond?
I'm human. I haven't been bitten by a radioactive spider or anything.
So that's exactly it. It's like you were saying, Dan, we as humans are capable of so much more than we give ourselves credit for. Mm. And this guy's put in the hours, he's put in the training, self-trained, no doubt, and we can do it. So... mm. I think as future continues, because let's face it, well, future will continue. I think we're going to see more
all
and more.
All things going well, future will continue.
Although that is a bit of an eerie subject with the world the way it is still at the moment. Yeah. But let's say future does continue. That's not even a sentence. Life. It is scrub future. No, it's not scrub future. It's a dodgy word. You know, you can be delicate with the word future because if you get rid of future, you're gone. But you could change it to life. And life's fine. Sorry, I've just got a call here, guys. Yeah. No. I'm not interested. I haven't got time to go on your bloody bike trip. What's that? No. No, I'm not going on a tandem with. It's just you, isn't it? It does link into the whale story, of course, because as whales use echolocation as well.
Of course. Yes. That's a very good point. Well, you guys are my friends, right? That wasn't a rhetorical question. You guys are my friends, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Good, just checking. Yeah. Good. Thank you. That's good. Because we now just have to work out with our friendship who has the most friends. And it turns out scientists have deducted that there is actually a paradox around friendship called the friendship paradox. Now, the friendship paradox, it's been around for a while. Since 1991, there was an article in a journal released titled "Why Your Friends Have More Friends Than You Do." And it's based on the fact that your friends on average are more popular than you are. According to this phenomenon.
And this was an email you got personally, wasn't it?
This is the
don't
thing.
Don't make out this like this is the an thing. Article.
I read this article, don't. And it's... And
it's not an article.
It's an article. Email. It's an article that is entitled, "Your." Well, it starts, "Your friends
Dear Leon,
are on your..." No, it's a paradox.
Okay.
And now a group of mathematicians have come up with a new theory on it, and they've found out that their equations describe real-world popularity differences amongst friends. So I just thought that we could quickly figure out our friendship paradoxes and the popularity differences. So the general idea is based on a simple calculation that the number of friends a person's friend has on average is greater than the number of friends of that individual person.
Right. Oh, so, say that again. A person's friends,
The number of a person, the number of a friends of a person's friend is on average greater than the number of friends of that individual person.
So it's just one step away,
yeah.
Not two.
No,
not
yeah.
a friend's friend. I not, heard from a friend's friend.
Well, that's
heard from a friend.
That comes into it.
Okay.
Does it keep getting bigger? Do friends
well,
have more friends?
This
than
is that.
Well, this friends,
is
friends.
This is exactly what they're now saying. This postdoctoral fellow at the Santa Fe Institute in New Mexico says that some people are less popular than their friends. And others are more so. And so they're saying that the averages are more often highly misleading or can at least fail to describe people's experiences.
So I tuned out there for a second. What was that last bit?
It's so confusing.
Well, let me go on. It says, to understand
this why...
That's
why you don't have any friends, Leo.
Okay.
Peddling this story, right?
Okay, so
no
listen to this.
About.
I knew this would be hard, but try and stick with me. Okay, to understand why, think about a person with just two friends.
Okay, think about a person with just two friends. Okay.
All right,
think of a
I've
person with just two friends.
I'm looking at him. Yep.
Why, who's in the room with you?
No, he's not in the room. I'm not revealing who it is, but
okay.
I can see him on the screen.
Okay. Okay. Think about a person with just two friends contrasted with a person who has hundreds of friends.
Mm-hmm.
So can you, are you
yeah,
doing that
him.
Now? Good. Okay.
Yeah,
now imagine entering this social...
There he is.
Oh, there
he is. Reese is looking into a mirror just for the listener.
It was very subtle. Very subtle. Okay. Now imagine entering into this social bubble. You are more likely to be friends with the social butterfly than the wallflower, simply because there are more chances you are one
Wait,
of the hundreds.
Go back there. Who's
okay?
The social butterfly is the guy with 100 friends.
Hundreds, and the wallflower is the two people, and you're more likely
okay.
to be friends with the person with hundreds of friends because
right.
there's more chances that you're one of the hundreds. Of the social butterfly's friends than of the wallflower's two best buddies.
Yeah.
But it's still possible for you to become friends with the wallflower, and focusing on averages that can obscure when that might happen. I don't even understand what this is saying. Okay, so now this guy and his colleagues have developed...
What do you mean now?
So this is how you lose friends, is it?
Okay, hang on. I can get this. I can bring this back.
So
now,
you're going to lose the two friends you have because you're harping on about the story.
Well, it made sense when I read it.
Which refers to Dan
now,
and I with all
reason,
our friends.
It doesn't make any sense anymore. Hang on. I'll just read this part, and then if this doesn't make any sense, then I'll just...
Okay.
Resigned
okay.
to having no
what
friends.
What was the point of it? What was the point of it all again?
It was us to figure out who was the most popular. I thought there might be a calculation. I thought they might give us a formula of who has
oh,
the
yeah.
most
Oh, yeah, well, that's
friends.
What we're looking for. I thought there was some sort of experiment we were going to do or a formula to be revealed.
The same. Okay, let's see. To understand why...
so you haven't even read the article to the end to know if there is one?
No, I've got most of the article. I thought maybe it might... I said something about social media networks, and I thought that we could quickly do a calculation.
Okay, right.
Here's the thing with people who have friends, okay? They read their articles, okay? And they tell their friends about the article before they go on air.
I read most of it. I read the good bits. I read the summary. Okay, so now this guy and his colleagues have developed this new mathematical equation to make the friendship paradox.
Wait, well, this guy and his colleagues. He doesn't even have friends.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe
he's calling them colleagues. They've gone up to him. Look, if you're going to write this article about friends, don't include us, okay? Why? We're not your friends. We are your colleagues, okay? But I'm writing it. It's not even an article. It's an email to your only other friend, isn't it?
No.
Yes, it is, and we are not going to be part of it. We've got hundreds of friends. Don't you include us as your friends. We're your colleagues, and you and your mate Buttons could deal with this, and don't you let him bring it up on air. This is your elaborate way of trying to get more friends. This reeks of a scientist who's gone, you know, he's worked his ass off on all the things he's done and, you know, like scientists do. Yeah. And at one point he's gone, why don't I have any friends? And he's gone, you know what? Like scientists do, because they're big, brilliant nerds. And they go, oh, I'm going to work that out. I'm going to work out why I haven't got any friends. And this is what he's done.
Yeah, this is it.
Hoping that this would actually get him more friends.
Oh, well, it's not working. This is
just for him to explain to his parents, isn't it? Well, I don't have any friends. Oh, it's a paradox. It's a really weird paradox. Science,
it's a shame
Mom.
His son hasn't got many friends. Well, it turns out it's actually a paradox. Yeah. So it's not his fault. Okay. He's got plenty of colleagues. And when he went to sort of get with one of these friends and sort of hang out, by the way, the guy he was going to hang out with had hundreds of friends, I might add. So he's one step away from friendship.
He's very close to hundreds of friends.
I mean, I've got my one friend, but unfortunately, he is away because he's gone a bicycle trip. He's trying to convince me to go with him. I'm not keen. he knows I don't have a bike, so he's gone and bought a tandem. And I'm just not interested, so I've written this article. All right, dear.
Okay, well, can I... Okay,
you've been listening to the Cryptid Factor again, haven't you, darling? Yeah, well, it's been 4 weeks since I've come up.
My other friends, my three other friends, my virtual friends.
Those are your only friends, aren't they?
We are. We're friends Yes, we're friends to people with paradoxes. If you've got a friendship paradox, we will be your friends. You just have to join our Patreon, and then that solves your paradox.
Yep. It's a simple initiation. It's just join the Patreon and do a quick ashtray skull, and then honestly.
Oh, I'll do an ashtray skull to be your friend, that's for sure, Mr. Darby.
As long as we're all laughing with each other, life goes on.
Can I read a couple?
Yeah, give us the end of this.
Okay. So this
I'm
guy.
I'm just going to use the bathroom. Now you carry on.
Okay, so this guy and his colleagues have developed a new mathematical equation to make the friendship paradox better match the range of situations found in real social networks. They base their equations on two assumptions from real-world studies. There's a significant degree of variation in how many friends people have depending on their social network, and popular people are more likely to have popular friends, whereas unpopular people are more likely to have unpopular friends.
I've got to get back to the podcast. Oh, I know there's hundreds of you. But look, honestly, guys, I've got to deal with these two colleagues. No, yep. No, wait outside. God, there's so many of you. Just wait, yep. No, I don't want to drink right now. Yes, it's a funny song. I'll be back in a minute. Guys, obviously, I've got a couple of these guys here that are just colleagues. They're not. Yeah, it's a paradox thing, honestly. Yep. Okay, just shut the door. Sorry, guys.
Oh, my God. We are your colleagues. That's exactly. That's it's really concerning. My only two friends just became colleagues by me reading this article. That's so shit. I knew this was a bad idea.
You've blown it. You've lost your only friends.
Well, exactly. I paradoxed them into colleagueness. Okay, so.
It's your own fault, buddy.
I know it is. That's the sad thing. Okay, so this is the part I've got to read. Researchers also developed a new mathematical theory, which states that on average, your friends are not only more popular than you, but also richer and better looking. This is a really depressing paradox. That's based
especially
on
when we started the show with how hot Dan was looking.
I know. Oh man, this is a really terrible article. God.
I gotta say, I haven't understood anything from what you said in the last 20 minutes, but I have no idea. I'm no further down the road of understanding what a friendship paradox is. I just have no idea what.
Like, it's basically,
I think it should
science.
This should be called the button paradox. This is the button paradox. Button has read you an article, it has all the information in there, but you come at the end having no idea what was said. How's that possible? He told you everything. It's a paradox. It's the button's paradox. What was your other stories? Give us a headline for one of your other stories. Just out of curiosity.
Let's see what we missed out on.
Okay. Yeah. Human-like robot creates creepy self-portraits.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Brilliant.
I would have loved that. That would have been so good.
What else
did you have? Okay, did you have any others?
Yeah, I also had 1947 alien autopsy film frame is up for auction as a non-fungible token or an NFT.
That would have been cool to hear about that too.
Stunning.
That's cool.
Oh, sorry. I thought maybe I chose a bad article, but
man, this is classic buttons. We just spent 35 plus minutes talking about nothing.
That's what I'm here for, guys. I bring it every week. Okay. The one thing I can guarantee. Is that I can talk about nothing for a solid 30 minutes.
Well, Reese, you said a random thing earlier, just saying the chicken or the egg, what came first? And it made me remember a thing that I was reading earlier this week, a really cool theory. So chicken or the egg, what came first? Egg,
that's a paradox.
Because, yeah, well, it is, yeah.
Please don't start.
So the thinking is that two prototype chickens that weren't modern day chickens got together, and then that led to a chicken being born, and then gradually that spread, and that's how we have chickens. So the egg, most likely, obviously, is the first thing to came. It was just through different species evolving into the chicken.
Right.
But I was reading a philosopher, Alan Watts, and he was talking about the fact that the chicken or the egg, it doesn't matter what came first. As far as we know, the chicken is in control, right? A chicken lays an egg and then creates a new chicken. And he says, what if it's the other way? What if a chicken is an egg's way of making more eggs?
Wow.
What if the egg is in control here? And that's the way that it gets spread.
Oh, yeah, that's what a little bit better than the friendship paradox. That paradox is a lot better.
And that only took Dan, less than a minute to bring up and chat about. And already we've walked away with something way more mind-boggling than an hour's worth of friends who have friends.
You know what they say? A fast paradox is a good paradox. And, that's if I've learnt anything today, I have learnt that a fast paradox is a good paradox.
That's good. Yeah. So now you've got your own takeaway. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's good.
You've redeemed yourself. A fast paradox is a good paradox.
Yeah.
And you've even got now in recorded proof of how bad a slow paradox can be. The friend paradox is the slowest, worst, most painful paradox anyone can ever discuss. And we've got through it.
That's quite an achievement, actually.
You guys are two of the best colleagues I've ever had, honestly.
This was my favourite moment when Dan said, I have no idea what you've been talking about for the last 20 minutes. Okay, let's do some cryptid news.
Okay, let's do cryptid news.
Attention, all personnel. It's time for this week's cryptid. Help me!
What do you got?
Well, I've only gone and got a bombshell.
Oh!
British Bigfoot bombshell. Proof of ape-like humanoids thriving in the UK. Shared by expert, okay? From the Daily Star, so you know it's true.
That's good.
This is an exclusive, they're calling it. Over the past decade, there has been a huge increase in the number of giant ape men sightings in the UK. Beasts of Britain author Andy McGrath is one of the handful of British Bigfoot researchers tracking them down. He believes that there could be communities of Bigfoot living in the UK. I mean, this is the first time that I can recall of ever hearing such a thing. Have you guys ever heard of the idea that there's hairy hominids in the UK? I mean, this is...
No, not really.
It's news to me. So he says, while they're not as infamous as their US counterpart, Sasquatch, Andy says there's plenty of evidence of their existence if you know where to look. He said the idea of a British Bigfoot is not very accepted worldwide, even among the Bigfoot community. But our history mainly relates to the legend of the Green Man, hairy yes. man-like creatures that are depicted on ancient heraldry-like crests and carved into our ancient churches.
The Wudawus.
What can you tell us about them, Dan?
Well, so Wudawus were almost kind of like a Bigfoot-like character, a sort of feral hominid, and you can see them in gargoyle-like carvings throughout right. churches and so on. And kings in the past used to wear them to fancy dress costume parties, and they were really predominant in the mythology of Britain. And the Green Man is a real New Agey kind of thing that you see a lot here, very much a part of the mythology of the British Isles. I don't know actually too much about it. What I do know is it's not a Bigfoot. It's not a sort of separate species. I think it's meant to be feral humans that right. have just kind right. of continued being feral, I think.
Okay, so that was a bit of a non-story, but I still thought that was worth bringing up. If there's anyone listening in the UK, as we know there's hundreds of you, if you've had any sightings, please let us know.
If you typed into Google Bigfoot sightings UK, I mean, there's a lot of things saying, is this Bigfoot
right.
man captures image of Sasquatch in Britain? Is this a photo of a UK Bigfoot? The day Bigfoot stalked workers in a Cornwall forest.
So there are stories there.
There's stories.
There are accounts.
Yeah. But that's interesting because he's saying that Bigfoot experts don't see Bigfoot. So maybe there are stories, but none of the Bigfoot experts see it as legit stories.
Yeah, that reminds me of a paradox.
Please no more paradoxes.
Because like they're saying, okay, we don't believe you guys in the UK that you're seeing them. We're seeing them here in North America. You know, we yeah. have, how come you guys are seeing them? What's your evidence?
They're our thing.
They're our thing. We've got the knocking, we've got the footprints, you know, and we've got the eyewitness accounts, and we've got the odd bit of here that doesn't classify as human. So what have you got? Well, we've got the stories, we've got them in the coats of arms, you know. There's been the odd account, someone's heard something. So you know, you've got to sort of like weigh up the evidence and go, oh, well, ours is heavier than yours. So yours is, you know, unless you get a single footprint, you know, you're out. Or, you know, it must be the war between the communities would be interesting.
So it's proof. Okay, well then moving on to real Bigfoot news.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a woman reports a Sasquatch encounter outside a gym in Ashland in Colorado.
Oh, cool.
The 20-year-old woman was walking out of the warehouse 24-hour gym in Ashland around midnight after finishing her workout. She turned to the right and headed to her car in the well-lit car park. There were no other vehicles on the lot. As she turned around the corner, she heard a twig snap. She looked and saw a creature 7 to 8 foot tall and covered in gray fur.
Oh, gray.
And then it just raced back into the woods about 30 yards away. So it sprinted 30 yards. It was far too large, likely several hundred pounds, she says. and moved too quickly to be a man. Shaken and in tears, she called her parents from a nearby restaurant, asking them to come and drive her home. She had likely encountered a Sasquatch, according to nationally acclaimed Bigfoot investigator Matthew Moneymaker.
There he is
from BFRO. The sighting was reported to him by this woman's father, and she doesn't want to be identified because even the friends that she has told this to have started mocking her and what have you. But she is, Moneymaker says that she is very, very shaken. He's talked to the father and he says that this is definitely not a hoax report, he says.
So wait, this was in an urban area?
It's urban-ish area. It's right near the woods.
And it was just standing there looking at her.
Yep, that's right.
And it was dark, right?
It was dark. It was midnight. But she definitely, it was light enough. It was well-lit area. It's in a small town, so it's not like it's, you know, there was very likely that she was the only one around.
And you wouldn't report something like this if it was a possible misidentification of someone in a big grey tracksuit or whatever. You know, you wouldn't even bother
And you wouldn't
be mentioning it.
No, and you wouldn't be in tears calling your parents from a nearby restaurant, you know, freaked out. Moneymaker assigned the sighting as a Class A rating, he calls it, the highest of his three-tiered scale. According to his website, the difference between the classifications relates to the potential for misinterpretation of what was observed or heard. A given witness might be very credible, but could have honestly misinterpreted something that was seen, found, or heard, to your point, Reese. Thus, for the most part, the circumstances of the incident determine the potential for misinterpretation. And therefore, this classification, he says, is a Class A rating because it involves clear sightings and circumstances where misinterpretation or misidentification of other animals can be ruled out with great confidence.
Wow.
In this case, there are only three possibilities, he says. Either the witness is lying, which I am sure she is not, he says, or she saw someone in a Bigfoot costume, which makes no sense at all. Ordinarily, in a hoax, the person reporting the sighting or taking the photos is in on the scam, or she saw a real Bigfoot as the third option, which he believes is the case. After a
while, is there a fourth option?
No, there's just the three. There is.
I'm proposing a fourth.
Yeah.
Could it have been a British Bigfoot? Because
on
it
holiday.
Was gray and it was in the wrong place at the wrong time, was confused.
Good point. Very good point.
Yeah. And then suddenly ran off.
Back to Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what were the final, was there any words from the Bigfoot as it took off? I'm thinking something like, tally-ho! or, you know, anything that might have been a little British as it left.
Yeah. Toodles.
Yeah. Toodles. That's cool. And what interests me also is the grayness. Like, it was obviously an older creature.
Yeah.
And if it's an older one, was it interested in maintaining its youthfulness by going to the gym?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it looking for a workout?
It's a 24-hour gym, probably the perfect gym for a Sasquatch because you get in there when no one's in there. There was only one car in the car park. He was probably waiting for that car to leave.
Yeah.
And in he goes, 3 a.m. workout.
Yeah.
For the British Sasquatch on the treadmill.
You imagine how completely munted all the gear would be after Sasquatch has been in.
Can you? And like, it would lift everything really easily. It was just things are smashed and dumbbells are falling off.
It's like a scene from Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, it goes to get one of those little cone drinks, you know, those little cups that are in a cone so you can't put them down.
Yeah, yeah.
It just crushes it. water.
And the 3 a.m. thing, I mean, that could be jet lag as well if it's a British Bigfoot.
That's
a very good point.
It's on UK time. It's like, let's work out. I'm bored. No, everyone's, there's one person there. Oh, wait. Okay, here we go.
Oh, she's seen me. She's seen me. Shit.
Oh, shit. Toodles!
Well, the interesting thing is that in this little place called Ashland County, this is actually the sixth official Sasquatch sighting, dating back to 1943, where a man recalled being picked up by a Bigfoot as a child.
Mm.
And then more recently, in 2015, residents at a campground reported seeing a tall, perhaps 8 foot tall creature in the shadows before it bolted away. So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. Did I tell you guys that I recently met a man who was, he was, came to do our garden, who was stolen by an eagle when he was a child?
What?
From a field in Kazakhstan?
What?
Wow. Stolen by an eagle.
Yeah, he's from Kazakhstan. He was a baby. He was in a field, and an eagle swooped down, picked him up, carried him away, and his mum chased after it with a stick and beat the eagle with a stick, and he got dropped.
What a shame. Wow. What a shame she did that, because imagine if he was raised by eagles.
Oh, yeah.
You know how wild people get raised by the animal that, that they get kidnapped by or left with?
Yeah.
That'd be incredible. He comes out squawking and talking like
an
eagle.
I don't think the eagles are stealing babies to raise them. I think that's the issue I have.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Okay, yeah. So they're not going
to
raise
them. I've got you back to the nest. I'm going to raise you now. Okay, right. Now you're going to be a bird. Get your arms out. That's right. Because, oh, God, you haven't got many feathers, have you?
Who's this new baby?
That's a new one I want to raise.
Oh, no, come on, Marjorie. We've got kids. Stop going and picking up humans and raising them. You can't adopt these humans. The nest isn't big enough.
Oh, come on, Brian.
I'm sick of it. I'm going on a bike trip.
I imagine as well, just like that little nudge that the mummy bird gives the little birds to make them fly, you know, force them use the wings.
Go on. It's like, there you go. I can't. Go on, just go. Oh, shit.
Gotta go and steal me a new one.
It's a waste of 5 years worth of raising. Little shit can't even fly.
I got a quick story. Should I chuck in a final story?
Yeah.
This was news from May, which is that there is a woman in New York who claims that Bigfoot has been stealing her garbage cans and moving them on her behalf. So this is, she's found footprints and she's convinced that she's seen this happening a lot. She said, "I saw the eyes. It stood about 10 to 11 feet tall and my heart was racing." So her name is Jane Vespa. And she lives in Highland in the Ulster County of New York. And Highland is in the Hudson Valley. It's home to lots of Bigfoot sightings. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if, you know, when you say the words New York as a foreigner to America, I picture the city. But obviously this must be woodland area.
It'd be the state of New York.
Yeah, exactly. So according to local media reports, says the article, Vespa has seen Bigfoot in her yard at least 4 times since January, often enough that she's both scared and ready with her cell phone. That paid off on the last sighting on May 6th when she captured a video of what she claimed was Bigfoot's glowing red eyes in the dark.
Ooh.
And so she's posted up that video to...
Oh, have you got it there?
I'll see if I can find it. The news has still been coming. So actually, we might have a latest update here from her.
Ooh.
Here we go.
Oh, wow.
May 6th. These are the footprint activities that she found.
Mm.
How do we feel about that? Because what we're looking at is a mossy ground.
Yeah.
And the footprint is like the moss has been removed.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah, you'd squash it down. You wouldn't make it dissolve.
Unless when you squash it down, it actually dies and then disappears.
That doesn't make much sense either.
No.
Well, let's see more photos.
And then, look.
All right. But again, why is the grass gone?
That doesn't make sense.
No.
Unless Bigfoot ran through a puddle of Roundup.
And everywhere it went, it killed the vegetation.
Yeah. But that would be a good idea, wouldn't it? If you just put big pools of Roundup around so when it runs through.
This could be another Buttons fairy time.
These are general ideas worth sharing. Oh, right, there's a glowing,
there we go.
So this is a video that we're watching right now of glowing eyes sort of moving like a UFO.
That is ridiculous.
Well, you know what? Either she's holding the camera still and the Bigfoot is like his head is bopping all around the place.
Yeah.
Or she's a terrible videographer. Or they're the brake lights of a car that somebody was filming in the distance in a foggy night.
It's two red lights in the distance, and then someone's with the, well, let's be honest, perhaps Jane has got the camera and has just moved it left, right to make it look like shaky, but it's clearly not eyes.
They don't blink much.
Whatever the stuff, Bigfoot's a favorite, whatever, look, honestly.
Do you know what, though? This is the good thing. In a couple of days, I'm going to be back in New York City. I'm pretty sure, I can get up to where she is. And so maybe I go and have a look myself.
Yeah.
You could meet Jane.
Yeah, and meet Jane. And then whether or not she will show me the footprints or the plaster casts.
I think a bit more research should be done before even embarking on that journey, personally.
I think Buttons has seen an opportunity of how to expand his friendship group here with Jane.
Well, she just may be wealthy and good looking and have lots of other friends that I can tap into. So
I think we should warn Jane that you're coming, because she might want to head off on a certain bike trip that's available. And on that note, that is it. What a journey.
It's so good to be back amongst colleagues.
Oh, absolutely. As soon as we get off here and I can join my friends, it'll be fantastic. Okay, see you guys.
Bye.
Toodles.
Toodles.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.